From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 15th day of February 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Travis Mateer will join us. He's an extension educator in beef production for University of Illinois and will tell us all about next Thursday's IPT bull sale. That auction will take place Thursday at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. The Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale has been improving the genetics of the state's cattle herd for more than 50 years. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast, too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Agribull right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Mike Zuzulo now joins us from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Nice to be with you, Todd. Happy Friday to you.
So I want to talk to you about trade earlier in the week, the bump, sharp bump up in wheat futures, because you watched this so closely. I think it was 14 cents. I understand what happened with soybeans, but why did wheat manage to make that bump? And did that make any difference for you during the week?
Well, it did, because we didn't see follow through to the upside, because we tested some really key resistance levels, both in terms of moving averages and weekly highs and even monthly highs as well, Todd. And that really set us up for a need to have follow through from the technician standpoint. I think in part the wheat had such a strong reaction because of the follow-through from the USDA report and the tighter U.S. winter wheat acres. I think there was a big weather threat earlier this week that didn't really manifest itself because more snow came into the hard red wheat belt. The other thing, other than export inspections being friendly as well at about 20 million bushels, the one thing that really changed the tenor midweek was the report coming out, and this really surprised me, the United States and the European Union were going to usher in fresh sanctions against Russia. You could almost see it on a 30 and 60 minute chart with the Russian ruble and the US dollar when that was announced. And you saw the quick and almost immediate reaction, not just in US wheat, but especially in the European wheat markets. I think the French lead month wheat made a multi-month low this week. I didn't check and see what multi-month level it hit, but I can tell you that our 52-week moving average in soft red wheat was hit. We also got down to that $5 handle and went just below it. We got dangerously close to taking out last month's low. So the technicals went from really nice looking in the beginning of the week to really tough actual sell signals in the oscillators, corn, beans, and wheat by the end of the week, and led by the wheat, as you say. And this is heart and soul goes back to how strong these macro markets are in terms of the influence they have on the wheat market especially.
So you're talking about fundamentals of just simple supply or just the outside markets and what's happening in global trade?
Yeah, I think the supply-demand fundamentals actually are very strong, and they didn't really weaken that much. Sure, the weekly export sales were a marketing year low in wheat, but that was still in the rearview mirror going back to early January. No, I really felt like that 90% of the break in the wheat and the failure technically was because of this issue with the new sanctions, because we did this not long ago, and the Russian ruble got clobbered. And we lost a lot of business both to Europe and to the Black Sea when it came to the wheat. I mean, we started off the week, like you talked about, started off the week with getting some Egyptian business. And, you know, we really saw a lot of tenders and a lot of activity compared to what we're used to.
It was an up and down wheat, or week rather, for the soybeans. What's your assessment there?
You know, I think the weekly export sales were negative because they were a net cancellation. And I think the trade could have gotten by with that, Todd, if we had not seen January soybean imports, total imports from that China bought, down 13% from January 2018. That is a clear sign in the trade's mind, at least the colleagues I talked to this week, that the African swine fever is really manifesting itself. And I think the demand nerves are really becoming strained. And this goes back to probably why we were able to hold that 905 support on a weekly close in lead month beans, was some better rhetoric as we finished out the week from President Trump and his press conference. Had it not been for that, I would have been very nervous that not only would we have taken out 905, but the really major support of 895. And I think this memo of understanding that is supposed to be coming between China and the United States is almost a must-have, because if we don't get that, we probably won't have them come over next week to Washington and keep talking. And then all of a sudden, we may not have an extension of the deadline. So this is a domino situation at this point. And I think the beans are really on kind of high alert not to lose any more ground.
Speaking of that high alert, and you mentioned the trade numbers or export numbers being behind from the United States Department of Agriculture. And so we saw those numbers earlier in the week. There were some cancellations that were shown in the numbers, but those were from a long time ago. Is there fear in the trade that a continuation of that kind of cancellation will show up in the numbers as we begin to catch up from USDA?
Absolutely. I think that is the heart and soul of what's going on. There's two reasons for that. Weekly export inspections on Monday, while they were at 39 million bushels and better than probably what the trade was maybe expecting, we're still running 37% below a year ago levels. Those are real-time numbers. Second, and probably just as importantly, is the fact that the trade caught wind through news reports that China was trying to peddle into its private market, into its crushing market, the recent sales that it had purchased from the United States, and there were no takers. Why were there no takers? Well, because the crush margins are still very much negative, and also, and probably more importantly, to that point is the price is too high for the crusher and for the private consumer commercial in China right now. So I think it really left a big question mark in Chicago. Again, talking to people and hearing things in the news, it really left a question mark as to whether those 5 million metric tons purchased by USDA or four, whatever the number may be, really hasn't gotten into the market, hasn't really been purchased for a definitive time period at this stage of the game. And again, that all roads tend to lead back to that African swine fever. If my sources are correct and we've lost 6 million sows and you use seven pigs per litter because they aren't as efficient as us, you're talking about 42 million head of hogs that are not going to get fed if that's a near accurate number. So I think Chicago's very well aware of that.
Yeah, and that's something like, 10% of the hog herd or thereabouts. Roughly speaking, I think they raise 400 million head of hog, maybe. I don't know.
Closer to 700, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, 700 million. My numbers are old.
Well, that's because they're hard to get. I mean, we just got an update not long ago, and they're running about 10 times our production or our slaughter level, it sounds like.
Well, still, it's 5% of the, or thereabouts.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's a big number, and it's a big number because South America's harvesting. That's the other part of this equation that I think the trade woke up to. And so, if you can't tell, I'm very nervous about the soy complex. I think it's very vulnerable because it had a good shot to go higher after the crop report came out and those real low world oil seed and soybean stocks, and didn't manifest itself. So I think we're back to that negotiation issue being a must have here in the next 10, 15 days.
Are you taking any action on your nervousness?
Yeah, I will be. In fact, I'm going to be posting part one of my 2019 webinar to clients and subscribers. And if I see a breakout to the upside and technical resistance levels violated in the U.S. dollar, I think it's a necessity to get some more coverage in place heading into the springtime, just because it seems as though to me that if we continue with this weather pattern, we're going to suffer on corn acres and probably gain on soybean acres. So I kind of want to be ahead of that.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Great conversation as usual. Thanks, Todd.
Hey, you're welcome, and thanks so much to you, too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with this item, though you've heard about it already. U.S. President Donald Trump said today he may extend a March 1 deadline for reaching a trade deal with China while keeping current tariffs in place, adding that the negotiations are very complicated. There is a possibility, he says, that I will extend the date. Trump told this to a news conference in the White House Rose Garden earlier in the day. But he went on to say, if I do that, if I see that we're close to a deal or a deal is going in the right direction, I would do that at the same tariffs that we're charging right now, and I would not increase those tariffs. U.S. tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports, by the way, are scheduled to rise to 25% from the current 10% rate if no deal is reached by March 1st. On that note, Reuters is reporting China has pledged to end market-distorting subsidies for its domestic industries, but offered no details on how it would achieve that goal. China promised to bring all subsidy programs into compliance with WTO or World Trade Organization rules, the sources say, but U.S. negotiators reacted skeptically, in part because China has long refused to disclose its subsidies. Without knowing exactly how the Chinese government finances industries and state-run companies, any reform promises would be difficult to enforce, say the sources, speaking on condition of anonymity, because the negotiations are confidential. We'll stay in Washington, but switch tack to some different policies. Farm Bureau officials are hopeful AFBF will be able to support the EPA's just-proposed Waters of the U.S. replacement rule. AFBF President Zippy Duvall says in a written statement, release of a new draft clean water rule is a major step toward fair and understandable water regulation on American farms and ranches. And while AFBF staff are still reviewing the details, Farm Bureau's Don Parrish said earlier he's hopeful the proposal will resolve some big problems.
We're optimistic that this rule is going to provide the clarity that farmers and ranchers want. So, yes, I do believe it's going to be something we can support.
By the way, the earlier Waters of the U.S. rule, according to AFBF, treated much of the landscape as if it were water itself, forcing permits or fines for changes to sometimes wet potholes, ditches, and other land features. The 2015 rule, tied up in the courts, was still on the books in 22 states at the start of this year. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., but switch to pesticide registration. Senate Agriculture Committee leaders this week reintroduced the Pesticide Registration Improvement Act. The legislation would establish a framework for EPA when registering pesticides. The senators, including Pat Roberts and Debbie Stabenow, a Republican and a Democrat respectively, say the legislation would support the Environmental Protection Agency in providing timely approvals of crop protection tools. The bill also includes protections for farm workers, including resources to train farm workers in the safe and responsible application of pesticides. And finally today, Tom Slate, President and Chief Executive Officer of the U.S. Grains Council since 2012, and, by the way, a frequent guest of our Illinois Public Media Ag programming, will retire this summer. Following the appointment of his successor, the Council Board of Directors made the announcement this week during a membership meeting in Columbia. Slate says he has done what I intended to accomplish, adding he is confident the Council is headed in the right direction. The Board of Directors has appointed a search committee comprised of representatives from its membership, including the corn, sorghum, barley, ethanol, and agribusiness sectors. And that's a look at today's Ag News. Next week, I'll travel to Springfield for a couple of events. The Cover Crops Conference is Thursday. So is the Illinois Performance Tested Bowl Sale. Travis Mateer now joins us. He's an extension educator that organizes that sale. Thanks for being with us, Travis. Can you tell me a little bit about the sale? Let's start with how long it's been operating.
This is the 51st annual sale.
So this is the 51st annual sale. You've sold a lot of bulls over the year, about 4,700 or so at this point, for something like $8.7 million. And while those numbers are impactful, it's really, maybe you can tell me better, about the performance of the bulls in the herd in Illinois and what improvements they bring along with them. What's the goal of the sale?
Yeah, so the main goal is to provide Illinois cattlemen with a genetic source that's superior and will add profitable traits to their herd. And so that's been the focus of the sale for its existence, is to help producers find that source, and a reliable source, and an affordable source. And the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale, that's the reputation that it's built.
How many bulls are in this year's sale?
We've cataloged 59 bulls for this year's sale, and we have got Angus bulls, Simmental, Sim-Angus, and Hereford bulls in this year's sale.
And your expectation is that these will improve herds across the state in the Midwest?
Oh, definitely. We have a requirement that makes for genetic excellence built into these bulls, elite EPD requirements. The indicators that we use for their dollar value traits. No doubt these bulls have profitable genetics, multiple generations of profitable genetics built into them. And we screen them hard. We ask them to do a lot of things, jump through a lot of hoops, and meet a lot of requirements before they're able to run through the ring there on Thursday, February 21st.
You mentioned elite EPDs. What does EPD stand for?
EPD is expected progeny difference. It's one of the most useful traits that we have right now to predict the genetic capacity and value of breeding stock. So all the phenotypic records that we keep, birth weights, weaning weights, yearling weights, and then the measures that we take, just like frame, score, hip height, and then other traits too, like docility and foot score and udders. All of those phenotypic traits are helped to quantify our EPDs. And so those are some of the best indicators that we have of those performance and profitable traits that we want to breed into our cattle.
For the bidder, the buyer of these bulls, what's the point?
Yeah, I think that it's all about value, Todd. And so when we look at some of the prices paid for these bulls, actually in last year's sale, 62% of the bulls brought $4,000 or less. And 25% of the bulls in last year's sale brought $3,000 or less. And so there's no doubt that we have a handful of bulls that are just elite and do bring a premium in this market. But by and large, these bulls are extremely good value and really affordable for the average Illinois or Midwestern commercial producer that's looking for a bull that's going to take them to the next level.
What's the breed background of most of the bulls?
Yeah, so this year we've got Angus and Hereford and Simmental and Sim Angus bulls. We've got 23 two-year-olds or fall 18-month-old bulls and 36 yearlings. These bulls come from some of the best and most progressive seed stock breeders in the state of Illinois. That's one of the privileges that I have, is to work with these guys that are making these breeding decisions 3 years ago to mate these cattle to help producers be more profitable in the years to come.
Again, when is the sale?
Sale is Thursday, February 21st, starts at 11 a.m. Bulls will be available for viewing at 9, so 2 hours before the sale. If buyers have any questions, they can give me a call or look us up on the website at www.iptbullsale.com. And my contact information is on the website.
Hey, thanks, Travis. I look forward to seeing you next week at the sale.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Travis Mateer is an extension educator. He organizes the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. The auction starts at 11 a.m. next Thursday at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. It's open the evening before and at 9 o'clock that morning for viewing of the bulls. You can also see them online at iptbullsale.com. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Eric Snodgrass from Agribull now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Boy, what a change it's been, Eric. Over the last 24 hours, we dropped substantially as a cold front came through, and it shows.
Well, I tell you, I kind of wish we could go back to yesterday, because I got this hint of spring, but yeah, we had a front that passed through here. And it's interesting, that front, you know, where that colder, dry air has kind of moved in, what it's going to do is it's going to take this next system that we're watching kind of take shape over the next several hours. Well, it's going to sneak to our south for the most part, even, you know, in parts of Missouri and southern Illinois. In fact, there's going to be a mix down there for freezing rain and sleet when you get down south of St. Louis, really to southern Illinois, Kentucky, with this first system. But I'll tell you something, we've overall seen a pretty flexible shift in the position and strength of the jet stream over the west. That's quite important, because, you know, we've been talking about this trough out there, but what it's really done is it's elongated. And now it's deep out west, but then the bottom edge of it runs all the way from Southern California to the East Coast. And that is what we call a long wave, or in atmospheric sciences. And the point behind telling you that is those waves tend to not move. They tend to stay stationary or sometimes even retrograde west. All right, what does all this mean in terms of our weather? Well, because that trough stays out west, this really prevents, you know, these pieces like these little short waves coming off in the central plains, initiating big, big, big low pressure systems. So we're going to see multiple chances of precipitation through the next 10 days, but none of them are going to be these big hitting, you know, massive low pressure systems like winter storms. So we've got our next chance of getting some snow around here kind of sneaking through on Sunday morning. But it's going to be this broad sheet of snow that stretches from Montana all the way through Illinois by Sunday morning. But it's not going to be, you know, dumping feet. It's going to be just, you know, one of these quick little hitters that kind of moves on through. And the thing is that the pattern, because of the establishment of that trough out west, means we're going to be seeing more cold air than warm air, I think, at least over the next 10 to 15 days. So it looks like February is really going to finish on a wet note and on a colder note for us. Now, what I'm very concerned about is to our south and east. We have already picked up a pretty sizable, on some locations, well over 8 inches of surplus rainfall over the last 30 days. And we've got in the forecast for the same region to pick up another 2 to possibly, in some locations, 5 to 6 inches of rain. Now, the region I'm talking about is going to be parts of Arkansas, south Missouri, Tennessee, Kentucky, northern Mississippi, northern Alabama, Georgia, that area. And because that area has been so wet recently, we've got almost all of their, the river gauges at or above flood stage. And my concern is we're going to put so much more rainfall down in that area for the next 7 to 10 days. We may be risking, you know, the ability to move, you know, goods and services and grain up and down the river, because the rivers down there are not frozen. So they can still move a lot of goods. But this is a time long-lasting flooding threat for that area.
Hey, turn your attention to South America then. CONAB, USDA's counterpart out of Brazil, on Tuesday lowered its size of the Brazilian soybean crop to about 115 million metric tons. But I take it the weather's getting better there.
Yeah, you know, what took a lot of that yield out was the fact that the administration was not being cooperative with a stronger Brazilian monsoon, really for the last 45 days of the first crop, down there, which was that soybean crop. So the thing is that pattern has shifted. We've now gotten over into what's called phase 1 and phase 2 of the MJO, and that's allowing the Brazilian monsoon to strengthen again. So we're seeing wetter than average conditions in Brazil while things are drying out in Argentina. Now, still quite a bit of thunderstorm activity in Argentina, but not the widespread flooding rains that they saw while Brazil was getting so much drier. So this has been, you know, we've kind of gone into the reverse of what we've been talking about for the last 45 or maybe days on Friday here. This is going to be favorable for safrinha crop, which is mostly a corn and cotton crop in most of Brazil.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible, joins us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.